I'm going to cover a subject that I've covered before, but I'm going to cover it in a way that I have never covered it before. I did some more study on it, and something came up that made me think I'd like to cover this subject. And I'll tell you what it is. It's the mark of the beast. An interesting subject. And every now and then people will come along and they'll say, well, I think it's going to be a laser, something that is done on you to mark you. And of course, it has to be a laser because that's up to date, modernistic. But I'm going to suggest that it is not an actual physical mark on your body. And I'm going to suggest that it is keeping Satan's laws, traditions, and days, specifically Sunday. And that's going to sound strange, but stick with me and see if you don't think it's a possibility. Can't prove it, but I think I'm going to give a pretty good evidence of it. And by the way, that is what has been taught, not just by us, but by many, many that have looked into this. And I'm going to do it by looking at a Hebrew word to start off with. Now, the mark of the beast is mentioned in the book of Revelation, and it's Greek. But I want to go back to the Old Testament and look at a specific Hebrew word. And the word is oath. The English equivalent would be O-T-H. O-T-H. I want to go, first of all, to a verse where it is not used. And that's Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 12. Deuteronomy 5 is where the Ten Commandments are listed. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, Moses is reiterating the Ten Commandments. Now, it's in Exodus 20 also. But then before they went into the Promised Land, Deuteronomy means, as I recall, second law. And he's retelling. And in Deuteronomy 5, he goes through the Ten Commandments again. And in verse 12, he gives one where it says, and specifically mentions the Sabbath. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. Now, he goes on to explain you need to teach this to your children. In chapter 6 and verses 6 through 9, he tells them, now look, God wants you to teach your children these laws and commandments, these words. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 6, and these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign. Okay, here's the word oath. The Hebrew word O-T-H. As a sign on your hand. And they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. Remember, where's the mark of the beast supposed to go? Either on your forehead or your hand. As you might remember, I'm not going back. Normally, I've always gone back to the book of Revelation to start off. But I want to go here. So, this is to be bound as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes. There are some Orthodox Jews that will actually, they have a little leather bands and a little box on their head that has it. And then they will have little leather bands and a little box on their hand with the Ten Commandments. It says, you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. And there are Jews who, you know, have a little slot where they put it there. Now, that is not what God meant to do. He meant that it's to be in your mind, in your actions, and to be talked about and thought about when you go even in and out of your house, everywhere. So that's why he says you're going to talk to them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. So it's all the time. They're to be on your mind and on your lips. Now I want to show another place that this Hebrew word oath is used. And it's back in Genesis chapter 4 and verse 15. So the law of God is to be written on your hand and between your eyes. That's your forehead. That's right up in here. Frontlets between your eyes. But in Genesis chapter 4, verse 15, we find the same word. Now we saw that they translated it sign in Deuteronomy 6 and verse 8. The law is to be a sign. But here, the same word translated sign, and by the way, this word is usually translated sign. But notice another way it's translated here in Genesis chapter 4, verse 15. And the Lord said to him, therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark. Guess what Hebrew word that is? Oath. O-T-H. Same word that was to be a sign on their forehead, on their frontlet between their eyes, and on their hand. Set a mark or a sign on Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him. I want to go to Exodus chapter 31 now, verses 13 through 17. In some places in the Bible, God specifically picks out certain of his laws. This is Exodus 31, and we'll start in verse 13. He picks out certain of the laws, specially to be a sign. And he does that here. He does it twice. Exodus 31, verses 13 through 17. Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign. There's the word oath. It's a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Why would God's law, why would he say the law should be as frontlets between our eyes and written on our hands? Well, look. God's law is to be something that we keep. We do things with our hands. We shovel. We cook. We drive. Whatever we do. We do our, many men, their business is with their hands. Most people back then were farmers. Or they had sheep or cattle. And they use their hands. But also God wants it to be in our mind, in our thoughts. And the forehead is the symbol, and between our eyes is the symbol of our thoughts, of what we're thinking. So here is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, an oath. Or as they translated back in Genesis, a mark. This is the mark of God, not the mark of the beast. This is the mark of God. Where is it to be? On your hand, frontlets between your eyes. It is a sign or mark between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Work shall be done for 6 days, but on the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. This sign is a covenant. This is the sign of a covenant. It is a sign, an oath, O-T-H, Not like you make an oath by raising your hand and swearing, but it's a sign, a mark between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. So twice here he is calling it a mark or a sign between me and the children of Israel. So he specifically picks out of all of his laws the Sabbath as a sign. And you know, it's one of the more obvious things that people see in God's people, isn't it? One of the more obvious things of the children of Israel, of the Jews, is that they were to keep the Sabbath. I mean, that's something people can see. They can see that you're not working on that day. They can see that you're gone on that day. My neighbors know that, who watch us, that we keep the Sabbath. On Sunday, we're out working, you know, doing the yard work. But on Saturday, they see us get dressed up and go out the driveway. And we're gone. They know we're gone. I want to go to Exodus 13. And here is another Sabbath. But this is an annual Sabbath. In Exodus 13. This is God introduced to them the Passover and told them how to keep it in chapter 12. And then in chapter 13, he elaborates on it. Exodus 13, verses 6 through 9. Verse 6 says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. And no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. Now notice verse 9. It shall be as a sign. Now there's the Hebrew word oath translated mark in the book of Genesis. A mark. This is the mark of God. It shall be a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. You know, it's interesting. When we keep God's law, it's to be on our hands, what we do. But also it's to be in your mouth. What does he mean there? What did Jesus say? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So the days of unleavened bread, God's law, are to be in our heart and to come out of our mouth. For with a strong hand, the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. God came to Ezekiel in Ezekiel 20. And talk to them, and I want to turn there, Ezekiel 20, verses 10 through 20. Ezekiel 20. And he's going through the history of the Israelites. And specifically, also the Jews. And telling them why they went into captivity. Ezekiel was in captivity in Babylon. And he's reminding them of the things they did and did wrong. And so in Ezekiel 20 and verse 10, he says, therefore I made them go out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness. And I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. That's if you do them. Of course, if you don't do them, it brings death, doesn't it? Verse 12. Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. One of the most obvious things that we do as Christians. It's not just that we don't murder people. Most people aren't murderers. It's not just that we aren't thieves. They say the majority of people actually do take things that aren't theirs. But they're small things like from the office or, you know, small, minor things that most offices don't even worry about that they might take. But one thing that really stands out about us to other Christians is that we keep the Sabbath. And interestingly enough, maybe you have kept up with, and I didn't know his name, I've never watched the show, Two and a Half Men, this Angus T. Jones. And Lucretia and I actually went online and looked it up and watched what he had to say when he was interviewed. And it was interesting. Have any of you done that besides us? Just a few? Well, you know what he has learned? To keep the Sabbath. And he mentions on there that he read his Bible. He said, I was a loser. He actually said, I was a loser. He said, I had a friend come in who had a guitar and he's really working on playing it and learning it. But he can't even afford to have an amplifier because his family's going through tough times. And he said, here he was in my trailer at the TV studio lot. And it's filled with all kinds of stuff, including these a fancy guitar. And he said, it's just sitting there. I don't ever practice. He says, I've been a loser. But now he has found the Sabbath and he's reading the Bible and he's getting excited about keeping the Sabbath. And he said, I want to keep the Sabbath. It's been just, he was going from church to church to church to church, happened to end up in a Seventh-day Adventist and also on Saturday, Sabbath. And the sermon just really hit him. And he's learned about the Sabbath. He says, finding the truth. And all. I heard secondhand that Angus's mother is saying that he has been brainwashed into a cult. See? Why? Because, you know, if he were going to the Baptist church, she wouldn't say that, would she? But it just separates people out if they're keeping the Sabbath. It's a sign. It's a sign. Now, to this world, it's a bad sign. But not to God. Chapter 20, verse 13. Yet the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They did not walk in my statutes. They despised my judgments. Which if a man does, he shall live by them. Keeping them doesn't kill you. And they greatly defiled my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my fury on them in the wilderness to consume them. But I acted for my name's sake, that it should not be profaned before the Gentiles in whose sight I had brought them out. So I raised my hand in an oath to them in the wilderness that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, the glory of all lands. Because they despised my judgments and did not walk in my statutes, but profaned my Sabbath. Notice which one he's picking out, especially here. For their heart went after their idols. See, that's what's in the mind and in the heart was the problem. Nevertheless, my eyes spared them from destruction. I did not make an end of them in the wilderness. But I said to their children in the wilderness, do not walk in the statutes of your fathers, nor observe their judgments, nor defile yourselves with their idols. I am the Lord your God. Walk in my statutes. Keep my judgments and do them. Hallow my Sabbaths, and they will be a sign. Same word translated mark. This is the mark of the Lord. not the mark of the beast, between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. You see how the Sabbath can be a mark on your hand, on your head, and on your hand? God's Sabbath? Does it give you a feeling as we go on what the mark of the beast could be? Look in Daniel 7, verses 23 through 25. See, we haven't even gotten to the New Testament. We will, after this passage, Daniel 7, verse 23 through 25. Thus he said, verse 23, the fourth beast. Now, if you go to any commentary, doesn't matter, Episcopalian commentary, Catholic commentary, they will all tell you the fourth beast is the Roman Empire. It starts off with the Babylonian and goes into the Persian and then the Greco-Macedonian. And then the Roman Empire. So they'll tell you, Daniel 7 right here, the fourth beast is the Roman Empire. Same as the beast in Revelation that has the mark of the beast. They'll tell you that's the Roman Empire. That's the great beast that comes out of the water in Revelation 13. But we'll read here, thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. Now, the Roman Empire didn't do that at first, but it will do it again. This will actually be fulfilled in the final resurrection of the Roman Empire. We've had the Roman Empire, the Holy Roman Empire, the Ottoman, under Otto the Great, not the Ottoman, that's the Turkish, but it will devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. And that's really telling some of the story of what we read in the book of Revelation. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings. And this is really speaking of the one who rules over it. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints. And by the way, this is the time when that little stone is cut out without hands and it strikes the image on the feet. Same thing as you see in Daniel 2. Anyway, shall persecute the saints of the Most High and shall intend to change times and law. Notice what this beast does. It goes on to say that he'll be conquered and the saints will be given the kingdom. And that is yet to happen. But this beast persecutes the saints and shall intend to change times and law. And has intended to change times and law and has done so. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. Where else do you see that? That's in the book of Revelation, isn't it? At the end time. Time, times, and half time. Other spots it calls it 42 months. So time is a year, times is 2 years, and half time, half a year, 42 months. Now I want to go back to Revelation now. And go to Revelation chapter 12, verse 9, to a verse that you know very well. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9. And we'll work our way up to the mark of the beast. Revelation 12 and verse 9. This is where we're going to see in this very chapter, not in verse 9, the time and times and half a time that the saints are given into his hand for a time, times and half a time, persecuting the saints. So here the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So we see who this is. You know that. The great dragon is Satan. Now let's go down and read verses 12 through 17. And we'll see that this is the same beast that back in Daniel 7 is going to persecute the saints and change times and law, and saints will be given into his hand for a time, times and half time. And we'll see that here. So verse 12. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea. For the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. This is when that fourth kingdom devours the whole earth. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth, it says. Chapter 12, verse 13. Now, when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. And that is now spiritual Israel. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. So how long is she in the wilderness protected? Time, times and half time. But we know that this beast is going to persecute the saints for a time, time and half time. But these saints are protected. Chapter 12, verse 15. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. Verse 16. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring. This is what was prophesied in Daniel 7 for time, times and half time. That they are, here are some saints who are given over to the dragon. And it says he went to make war with the rest of her offspring. Why is he upset? Because of what? It says, who keep the commandments of God. They have the sign of the Lord on their hand and as frontlets between their eyes, and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Testimony of Jesus Christ is a spirit of prophecy, it says later in the book of Revelation. And that spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus Christ. He is a prophet, and he came with a testimony. It's not the testimony about Jesus Christ, it's the testimony of Jesus Christ, which is the gospel of the kingdom. So these are people who keep the commands and have the gospel of the kingdom, the testimony of Jesus Christ, the spirit of prophecy. Now, let's just go straight on into the next chapter. As you know, God didn't make chapter divisions. Let's go right into chapter 13. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns. That's exactly the same as Satan. This is Satan's body on earth. Jesus Christ is in heaven, but he has a body on earth. He's the head of the body. It's the church. Satan is a spirit being, seven heads, ten horns, and he has a physical body. His physical body is the beast, those who do his will. A beast rising up out of the sea tells us in chapter 17 that the sea is peoples, nations, and tongues. So it comes out of peoples, nations, and tongues, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horn ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. If you go back to Daniel 7, I didn't read all of that. One of the beasts that was there was a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. One of the beasts was a bear. The leopard pictured And this is not just known by us. All the commentaries, if you go back to Daniel 7, was the Greco-Macedonian Empire. The bear was the Persian. His mouth, like the mouth of a lion. The lion back in Daniel 7 was the Babylonian Empire. But see, now this is the final fulfillment of Satan's government. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, which the Roman Empire appeared to be gone. And his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. That is, he comes back. So they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast. They don't realize they're worshiping Satan, but that's what they're doing. And they worship the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" Great war-making empire. And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. He was given authority to continue for 42 months, 3.5 years. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. The ones who were not in a place of safety in the wilderness. Makes war with them. How did he know them? Because they don't have the mark of the beast. These are people who don't have that mark. They have the mark of the Lord. They keep his commandments. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. Verse 10, he who leads into captivity, that's the beast, shall go into captivity, including Satan. Satan is leading into captivity, and he's going to go into captivity, isn't he? He's going to be bound 1,000 years. He who kills with a sword, this is speaking of the human beings, not Satan here, must be killed with a sword. Here's the patience and the faith of the saints. That is, these saints who are being killed are going to, as they're dying, are going to be able to say, I know that these people who are killing me are going to be killed. It's a promise from God. Verse 11, then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. Now here is something that is with the Roman Empire now. And has horns like a lamb. Looks like a lamb. Spoke like a dragon. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So this is something that appears to be a lamb, but is actually inside a dragon. Inside is still a dragon. Verse 12, and he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. This is a religious. This is a church group that is with the Roman Empire. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And the Catholic Church persecuted Christians who were keeping the Sabbath. And caused the Roman Empire to kill them. But now notice what happens. He's a miracle working person. Verse 13, he performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. You know, the king of the north was Syria, but it was taken over by the Roman Empire. And was conquered by them, and the Roman Empire became the king of the north. Well, the king of the south was always Egypt. And is it possible that there's going to be warfare between the Egyptian-led Muslim confederation and the Catholic Church, and which would have the Roman Empire, and not only would the Roman Empire defeat them, but also, the leader of the church calls fire down out of heaven on the Muslims. And there would be great celebration if that happened, that it would show oh, we're, you know, we're Christians, we're more powerful than your worship of Islam. I don't know. Some have speculated that. He makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. That he does like Elijah, calls fire down. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast. Or was it Elisha? You know, I'm getting old. Who called fire down? Which was it? Was Elisha? Okay, that's what I was thinking. No, it was Elijah sat on the hill. Telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. Now, some have wondered, what do you mean an image to the beast? Well, I don't know for sure, but let me just say that the speculation has been that the Roman Empire was a government. And the headquarters was at Rome. But they had outlying provinces and capitals of provinces. One was the province of Asia, which was the eastern part of the Anatolian Peninsula. Asia Minor, we would call it now. And the capital was at Ephesus. And then they had all of these provinces, and they had a capital in each of the provinces. And they would have a governor, a ruler, sent out to rule over that province underneath Rome. The church did the same thing. They later came to have the Pope at Rome, and they put bishops in every one of the provinces, I'm told, I've read. And the bishops were at the, wherever the Roman governor was, there was a Roman Catholic Church bishop. And so they set up their government. And just as the Roman Senate elected the emperor, so there was a Senate called a College of Cardinals that elected the Pope. So the government was set up of the Roman Catholic Church based on the government of the Roman Empire at the time. Speculation. Anyway, make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. And there may be an actual image, I don't know. That the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. They are going to set up an image called the abomination that maketh desolate. And could it speak? Sure could. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. Now, the mark of God was His law. This is a mark. Now, people who work with their hands abstain from working on Sunday, if they're Catholics or most people who call themselves Christian. Well, they don't really do it, do they? But, there is a study that came out a few years ago by the Catholics trying to encourage the Catholics to start keeping Sunday holy. And I don't think they got very far. They certainly didn't in the United States. But that could be enforced, couldn't it? I mean, if the Roman Empire, when the Roman Empire is reestablished and the Roman Church is ruling it, they can come in and say, you're going to keep Sunday. Which they would like to do now, but they don't have the power. But it's on their right hand, their foreheads. Now, those who don't work with their hands use their brains, their minds to work at a computer or something else. That no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. We don't fully understand this, but it's possible that it's talking about Sunday blue laws, that those who keep Sunday can buy and sell, and those who don't can't. In Germany, before World War II, the Jewish shop owners were required to put a sign, sometimes a Star of David, on their shops. And actually, some of the German police would go by, and if they would see a German, not a Jew, Jews were allowed to go there, but if they saw a German going into a Jewish shop, that they would throw them out and say, you know, they'd hit them and drive them out. So you couldn't do business. The Jews were restricted to doing business only with Jews for a while. And you know, it could get worse than that, where they just aren't allowed to do business at all if you keep Sabbath. Possibility. I want to go to Revelation chapter 7. Revelation 7, verses 1 through 3. There is a seal that is put on God's people. Here are people who are coming out of the great tribulation. And God's punishment on the earth is about to come. Revelation chapter 7, verses 1 through 3. God is now going to bring punishment on the beast. But before he punishes the beast, he is going to protect those. Now, this is a forerunner in Revelation 7, but it covers it further in Revelation 14, but I want to go back to here. After these things, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth or on the sea or on any tree. That's the first four of the trumpet plagues. Then I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea, saying, "Do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees till we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads." And the Bible says we're sealed with God's Holy Spirit. So they receive God's Holy Spirit, apparently, and they are protected, even though they're not in the place of safety. These are people who were converted during that 3.5 years. And we're not going into that today, but at least they're sealed. Where are they sealed? God's Spirit on their foreheads. And it reminds me of Ezekiel chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. Ezekiel chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. This is a prophecy of the end time. Ezekiel 9, verses 1 through 6. Now, it was a dual prophecy that he gave Ezekiel for the time that was coming for Jerusalem. But the real fulfillment of Ezekiel is at the end time. Then he called out in my hearing with a loud voice, saying, "Let those who have charge over the city draw near, each with a deadly weapon in his hand." And suddenly 6 men came from the direction of the upper gate, which faces north, each with his battle axe in his hand. One man among them was clothed with linen and had a writer's inkhorn at his side. They went in and stood beside the bronze altar. Now the glory of the God of Israel had gone up from the cherub, where it had been, to the threshold of the temple. And he called to the man clothed with linen who had the writer's inkhorn at his side. And the Lord said to him, "Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within it." Now, when you go back, you say, what abominations is it? Really, it's talking about the idols that they had, that they were bringing in idolatry and following idolatrous things, which is what most nations are doing. They're following idolatrous laws that have been changed, seeking to change times and statutes and laws. To the others, he said, "In my hearing, go after him through the city and kill. Do not let your eyes spare nor have any pity. Utterly slay old and young men, maidens and little children and women, but do not come near anyone on whom is the mark. And begin at my sanctuary." So they began with the elders who were before the temple. And I want to go back to John chapter 13, verses 5 through 9. John 13, verses 5 through 9. I was telling some very tall girls before services, I wanted to be tall, like most men. I could stretch myself to 5'9 when I was a senior and in college, but I've shortened down to 5'8. And there are advantages to being tall. You know, you can reach the top shelf and such. But there, when you're taking an 11-hour flight in economy class, there are big advantages to being short. And when you are in a single-size bed, there are big advantages to being short. So there are advantages both ways. Of course, these girls like to wear high heels so they can intimidate me even more. Look down on me. Anyway, John 13, verse 5 through 9 had nothing to do with the sermon. Just happened to notice some beautiful, tall young ladies. Made me think of what I told them. After that, he poured water into a basin, began to wash the disciples' feet, and wiped them with the towel with which he was girded. He came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, "Lord, are you washing my feet?" Jesus answered and said to him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but you will know after this." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." Notice what Simon said, because he understood that the hands and the head picture the law of God, which he knew he had broken. With his hands and with his head. So he said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Because that's those two items on the body picture keeping God's law. The spirit of the law and the letter of the law. And I don't know why it says, for sure, why it says the mark of the beast could be either on the forehead or on the hand. And I suggested the possibility that some people's jobs are with their hands. But in this day and age, some people's jobs are really not that much with their hands. They sit at a computer or so, or write, but their most of their thought is in their head. So whatever your job is, it would be that you don't, that you've got to keep the laws of the beast who has sought to change times and laws. You've got to keep those laws. And the most obvious one that God brings out of his laws was his Sabbath. He mentions the others, they're signed too. But that's the one he specifically brings out more often, that this is a sign between me and you. And the same is very true. There's a big difference between Christians, very obvious which ones are keeping Sunday and which ones are not keeping Sunday, keeping the Sabbath. Revelation 20 in verse 4. You know this. Revelation 20 in verse 4. I'll read it. And you can turn to it later if you wish. "And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Then I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus, for the word of God." They were killed. Why were they killed? It was obvious. They weren't being obedient to the ways and the laws of Satan through Rome. "Who had not worshipped the beast or his image, and had not received his mark on their foreheads or on their hands. And they lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years."